flower is a nice clump of flowers.
Right.
So we identify those spots where, and then how deep is the very important. So it has to be 2 to 3 times the diameter, the longest length of the bulb.
Yeah.
So it's no drops, they are small bulbs, so you don't put too deep.
Yeah.
And daffodils will go around 6 to 8 inches, mm-hmm. and tulips a bit deeper.
Yeah.
So even you can plant, make a combination of bulbs, all of them in the same spot, but a different depth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's how we manage. And you certainly, when after you plant, you make sure that you put a sign, a stake, a flag, whatever, so you know that there has been planted. Otherwise, after the spring, we will go and start moving everything, and we start pulling the bulbs.
Right.
Yeah. It also depends if you have rodents like squirrels,
mm-hmm.
which love to eat our bulbs, so they will go and dig it out and start eating. So that's another thing. Depending how much squirrels there is in your area, you can make a cage of mesh or chicken wire and put the bulbs in there. Yeah.
So you're putting them in really deep. So I can see why you don't want to wait until later in the fall when it's colder or wetter. You know, because that could make the whole operation quite a bit deeper, or not deeper, but more difficult.
Yes, yeah. So if it's a wet soil, it's muddy.
Yeah.
And then everything gets a mess.
Yeah.
If it is frozen soil, you don't want to work with a frozen soil. It's hard to dig. You don't want to touch it. So, yeah. So we have to do quite in advance before we get to those conditions that they are not nice to work with.
Right. So when the spring comes, the bulbs are planted pretty deep.
Deep, yeah.
So once the flowers have come and gone, and you're moving on to other things, can you leave them in the ground where they are, or do you pull them up and set them aside for the fall again?
That's a good question. We can go both ways.
Yeah.
We can, one is what I personally do. I leave my bulbs in there, so I know that it is the area where bulbs always there.
Yeah.
But there is other practice gardeners that would like to pull them.
Mm-hmm.
And pull them out so they can use that area for other crops. So I prefer just living there, so keep my garden kind of full, and I know where things are. Yeah,
yeah, and like you say, you know where they are. You have a plan for your garden, so you know where things are and where things are going to go, so you can kind of work around that. And that's all part of the planning.
Yes, yeah. So that's part as well. Sometimes it's advised to cut the foliage of the bulbs after they have sprung and they have flowered. But I don't do that anything. I just live there. It's more vegetation, more nice to see things. Yeah, so nature doesn't trim the leaves or the bulbs. It's just our practices as a gardener that we go and trim it. But nature doesn't. So let nature follow what nature does, and just it will grow well. Yeah.
Yeah. So we mentioned how it's week 37, and
mm-hmm.
We mention that every week because, of course, it's a really important planning tool for us.
Correct.
Yeah. I think one of the things I've learned over the course of this year in these conversations is really how important thinking ahead and planning is. And one of those tools is, of course, you know, knowing what week it is, which sort of keeps you on track for what activities are vital.
Mm.
And, you know, we're also talking about, you know, having a plan for where things go in your garden and, you know, keeping a track of that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we talked earlier about, you know, the importance of, you know, which plants go beside which plants and, you know, making sure, some plants are protected from the wind and et cetera.
Yep.
It's a real thoughtful process.
Yes. And you can go very much into detail. Like, you can go very broad each month, mm-hmm. which sometimes it's too broad for myself. There are many activities and we lose track what needs to be done.
Yeah.
So do it by week, it works best.
Yeah.
By daily, that is more difficult because, you know, we start doing one thing and say, oh, I will do it in half an hour. And when you realize you are two hours doing the same thing. So, yeah, a week helps us to keep track well, things to be done. It has been successful how we use here in barf stability.
Excellent. How are your fall programs going?
Next week, Thursday the 19th, we'll start with the fall cohort. Mm-hmm. We have 10 members of the SFU community joining us for planting and cultivating the garden over the fall.
Yeah.
And we'll go until Halloween, October the 31st, again. After that, it's too cold to be outdoors. Too wet as well. So it's doing well. So thanks to everybody who is interested in gardening with Embark Sustainability. That's well. Next week, we'll start with a food rescue program.
Mm-hmm.
Food that still is edible, but no anymore you can put in the shelves of a supermarket. So Embark collects those and freely distributes to members of this few community. So next week as well. So if you are interested in collecting some fresh vegetables, you can visit us in the... I think we are meeting in the Safeway Hall behind the bus loop. Yeah,
great. And how can people get a hold of Embark to find out more about that and your other programs?
Well, visit our website, embarksustainability.org, or our social channels at Embark Sustain.
Great. Thank you so much, Pablo Vimes.
Thank you. Until next week. Yep.
Bye-bye.
The Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival is back. Still Moon Arts Society is proud to announce the 22nd annual Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival. A fusion of art, nature, and community, this month-long festival celebrates the Harvest Moon, Still Creek, local art, and the diverse cultural traditions of the Renfrew Collingwood neighbourhood. Attendees can expect dazzling lanterns, live music, dance, food, art and nature workshops, and community performances, all including making salmon lanterns, mooncakes, and guided tours. Connect with the local nature as a community to raise awareness and bring positive change to restore Renfrew Ravine to its natural beauty. Learn more and register at stillmoonarts.ca.
And now it's time for Peter R.H. You got some opinions.
Yeah, well, it's about we did not have the rail strike. We had a lockout for a while, but it was actually, there's two companies, CN, and there's another one, Canadian Pacific Kansas City Limited.
Yeah.
And
those, of course, are the two big rail companies in Canada, moving pretty much all the rail freight across the entire country, and also down through the states, because they also have lines, I know, CPKC, which is
thus Kansas City,
yeah, right. Bought some rail lines that run all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, okay.
To move freight all over the place. So that's it was a big deal if they were both going to go out at
because,
the same time.
The article in the Peak, the last issue, which I actually read the entire one. You have to go online to read everything, and I did that. They were saying each one was $1 billion a day.
Quite
that's actually $2 billion a day. And you had, like, grain farmers. They wanted to have their grain in there. And
so, of course, that strike didn't end up happening because the government stepped in and ordered them back to work binding arbitration.
Which means that you are binded by what the arbitrator says. That's what it means. Okay.
So before we just get into it, I just wanted to offer one little correction because I mentioned last week that I saw picketers outside the Pacific Central station, which I thought maybe were related to railway workers, but it's in fact the other strike of some importance happening right now, which is Handy Dart, because there's a Handy Dart sort of, I guess, a terminal there where a lot of the Handy Dart vehicles are sort of based out of, and they're striking at Pacific Central Station, which is just main and terminal close to Vancouver, which is what I saw, and I incorrectly identified it last week. So anyway, so
this is from CN, and it says here, current rest and wages in 2023, this is from the CN a statement. The average conductor earned approximately $121,000, not including pension and medical benefits. In 2023, the average locomotive engineer earned approximately $150,000, not including pension and medical benefits. So, I don't know. I mean, it's like they're a sacred cow. Like, but look at how many people are not have a union, like people work at McDonald's and et cetera, et cetera. But it's like, it's always like, oh, they're giving it to the man. They would have gave it, but to us, a 50-cent Canadian dollar or something. I don't know. But I maybe, Magnus, you have a bit of a rebuttal to my...
Well, one of my understandings about this particular strike at this time, and Hayago's welcome to join in if he wants to as well at some point, was that it wasn't really about wages as such, because it sounds like they are quite well paid, but more about working hours and working conditions, because often train crews run really long hours, and of course you're at the head of, you know, thousands of tons of freight rolling on a line. And so that was my understanding, that it wasn't really about wages and such. But, you know, at the same time, it's a difficult situation because it really would grind much of our commercial economy or industrial economy and farming economy to a halt. So how do you balance that?
Oh,
I think it was interesting, you know, Air Canada pilots were going to go on strike potentially this week, and many people, in the same way they were called for the government to step in around the railway strike, were also calling in, you know, saying the government should do something about that disruption, because consumers and flyers, people flying, would be disrupted. But, you know, it's not really, you know, and I think the government did the same thing and said, look, it's up to the parties to resolve that, and in the end they did. You know, there have been other rail strikes in the past, but I don't know if I recall one where both companies were going out at the same time, which creates a, you know, I mean, I'm personally, you know, I'm you know, in favor of unions, and I think, you know, collective bargaining is the right way to resolve these disputes, and it certainly isn't, you know, fair to, you know, deny workers the right to collective bargaining by, you know, preventing, or the right to strike as a way of advocating for themselves. And, you know, far too often, you know, the business community, particularly, they tend to be the loudest voices around this, always wants the government to step in and end strikes because it's going to inconvenience them. And, you know, I'm sure that's true. And you know, there was a lot of that kind of talk when port workers were going on strike last year or the year before. But it's really, I think it's really problematic to not allow workers to organize and advocate on their own behalf. And, you know, striking is the main tool of workers to fight against for the most part, the much greater, you know, the which is mostly a power imbalance between, you know, companies and employers and workers.
That's a rebuttal to your rebuttal. On CBC Radio, we're not competing against that guy interviewing all these shallow famous people. But there's one before that, the current.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear it to compete against hearing CJSF, but I heard it on online to kind of prepare me for this. So I heard both sides. So on the current, they had the CN and CP Kansas City make their statements. Mm-hmm. And then they had the union representative from the Teamsters. And basically, in my editorial opinion, he was presenting rhetoric. The other side, the company, the man, as you might say, seemed reasonable what they were saying, what their issues were. And I'm going to contend, in my editorial opinion, mm-hmm. that they got greedy. And it was about getting even more money, even more money. And they're not working at McDonald's. They're not, I don't think Starbucks has a union. There was, they don't have that. So, I mean.
I think there might be one unionized store in Quebec, but they also might have shut it down.
So.
Tends to be what companies like that do because, you know, locations unionize one at a time, and then they just shut those locations down before the problem, as the company identifies it, not out loud, spreads to other locations.
I'm going to accuse them of being greedy. And the Teamsters do not have a good history, which mm-hmm. I'm going to get into a little bit here. But this is, Magnus probably will be shocked. I am an ex-Teamster.
All right.
And he knows it's on a technicality, right, Magnus? It wouldn't be me hauling freight, would it? No.
Probably not.
I was a security guard for a brief period of my life, Metropole Security. I don't even think it exists anymore, 1990. And they chose to have us. And, of course, they had to be involved longer than I did for the union to help me, and they never helped me. They took my money. So there you go. So I'm an ex-Teamster out of a technicality, so be it. Interesting. This is something I just found out this morning. Now, I knew that Robert Kennedy was sort of against Jimmy Hoffa, the Teamster, okay, the head of the Teamster.
I was wondering where you're going with this, but yes, okay.
Now then, I didn't know that prior to his brother being elected President of the United States, he came up with a book, The Enemy Within, the McClellan Committee's Crusade Against Jimmy Hoffa and Corrupt Labor Unions. Mm-hmm. And the work details events and information uncovered between 1956 and 1959 by the United States Senate Select Committee on Improper Activities in Labor and Management, in which Robert Kennedy served as a chief counsel. And that's before his brother became president.
Right.
Now, actually, the funny thing was that the father of the Kennedy brothers, he was a bootlegger during the 1920s, so he has a shady history himself.
Yeah.
Anyway, and there were, I kind of feel if John F. Kennedy had not been assassinated, as he were, the chickens would have came to roost on him. He was supposedly, when he was president, he would be in a swimming pool. Three naked women would be there. He would be naked, and some guy would say, "Mr. President, I came here for a policy decision." He said, "No, you're not supposed to be here. What are you doing here?"
Okay, well, we're getting pretty far away from the rail issue here in Canada. Naked women in the pool with John Kennedy.
Well, but actually, his brother, his son is not. I'm not so big on his yep. son, actually, but. Robert Kennedy actually, during the Kennedy presidency, was railing against, well, Jimmy Hoffa in particular. I didn't know that he had that book in 1960, which The Enemy Within. Well, that I yeah. just found out about.
Well, certainly, you know, the infiltration of unions in the United States by organized crime was a big problem, and I think the Teamsters are one of those unions. But I also think, you know, the various efforts of like the FBI and others to, you know, mostly attacking organized crime itself and weakening its role has made, you know, it's not really an issue here. And I don't think here in Canada, except perhaps a bit in Quebec, it's ever really been a big issue here in Canada, the infiltration.
Well, I'm not accusing any Canadian Teamster. And I was involved with organized crime
during
my security guard Teamster experience. But I'm just saying that the Teamsters do not have the greatest history
mm-hmm.
about them. In fact, I'm not the only one who will say this. That, I mean, mind you, it's not it's a minority opinion, but some people feel the Kennedy assassination is three entities: Castro, the organized labor, and organized crime. That was what killed them all.
All right. I don't know about that, but again, very far away from where we were started talking about the, you know. So I'm going to go back to the fact that, you know, I think, you know, every labor situation is going to involve a lot of issues. And I don't know if we should, you know, unions and workers who've been able to, you know, organize themselves to get a good piece of the pie, we shouldn't be, you know, jealous of that. You know, I don't imagine that being a train engineer or other folks working at the railways is necessarily an easy job. And more than anything, I think, you know, the right to strike and the right to collective bargaining is pretty important, and except when there are really extreme circumstances, because there are definitely, you know, the idea that there are, you know, essential workers and essential industries that we can't simply allow to stop exists, but it's something that should be used only sparingly and only with very good reason. That's
well,
my take.
Don't you think some people can take things a bit too far, that they are the underdog and then they become the overdog? Don't you think that can happen?
I think that can happen in any situation, but I mean, at the same time, you know, sometimes you get a, you know, you have a good bargaining position and, you know, it's probably the right thing to try and take advantage of that when you can, because, you know, companies with regard to workers have usually have no qualms about, you know, using their, you know, their power to get the best from workers. I mean, you have situations like Walmart in the States, and I'm jumping down to the States.
I live right close to a Walmart.
Yeah, well, you know, where, you know, they have tons and tons of poorly paid workers, even to the point where those workers, full-time employees of Walmart, still have to go and get social assistance support, you know, from the government. And part of the reason that happens is because Walmart is very good about keeping unions out of their workplaces. I mean, I don't know, you know, they employ hundreds of thousands of non-unionized low-wage workers, and that would not be the case if there's an effective unionization of that company, for example. And it's the only way that, you know, workers can fight for that.
My interjection was about, like, we got Walmart here in Canada. Do you know what the situation here in Canada as far as Walmart employees go?
Well, none of them unionized, that much I do know.
So it's just as bad as the United States, then?
I don't have that information about, you know, what their specific wage is, but I do know they're not unionist. Do you have any thoughts on this issue, Hago? Okay.
He's staying out of it.
All right.
The other thing is that it's called the trade union movement. Mm-hmm. Now, the trade union movement, that term means that you have a trade that, which is, I agree with it. And I, you know, like, you have a trade, and we don't. Right now, I think that air pilots in general don't get paid a lot. It this has been a trend in the last 30 years. And it just sort of got that they were paid, and now they're not. It's shockingly low. Mm-hmm. So I'm on your side with some issues. But the thing about the trade union movement, it excludes as such people without a trade. And it still exists, the IWW, International Workers of the World. Now, it kind of never really got off the ground. It's over 100 years, and you can still join it. It still exists. But that was the ideal that everybody is a union. They're all the workers of the world, mm-hmm. International workers of the world, are one union. And it kind of never took off. It's sort of more of a symbolic enterprise, which still exists, if you're interested.
Yep. All right, well, let's wrap this up. Any last thoughts?
Oh, how you think we? I've said enough for now.
Okay. All right, coming up in about 6 minutes, 5 minutes, is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Up later on during the day is Wandering Rhythms up at noon, and typically Tuesday up at 3 o'clock. Paul Weller is playing at the Vogue Theater this Friday night. He is, of course, the headman of legendary British punk band The Jam, and then later on The Style Council, and an extensive solo career. This is from a new album by him. This is Ship of Fools. And we're just about out of time here at Speak Up for this Monday morning. Thanks to Peter for his opinions.
Yes.
And Hayago for joining us here in the studio. And, of course, Hannah Fraser from The Peak. And Pablo Vimas from Embark. Quick rundown of the weather for this week. If you want to know what's going on, it's going to be a mix of kind of alternating mix of sun and cloud over the next few days, with temperatures hovering from almost up to the 20s down to highs of around 15 or 16 degrees, lows down to 11, 12, 13 degrees overnight. Like I say, kind of sunny today, rainy tomorrow, back to a little sun on Wednesday, Thursday, back to rain on Friday. And really, with that kind of mix-up in the weather, anything could happen. In terms of rain coming and going, so maybe bring your umbrella with you when you head out this week. Thanks for tuning in. We are, like I say, all out of time.
Do you like music, or do you like technology, or do you like talking to people? CGSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CGSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.
And on tomorrow's show, Logan will be bringing us an in-depth interview about organizing around Gaza in the queer community. Stay tuned for that tomorrow at 10.